You are Locked On Jazz, your daily podcast on the Utah Jazz.
Part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
It is Locked On Jazz for the 23rd of September, a week away from training camp opening. The final week, we'll keep it rolling. Tampering, I don't get it. And the last and final summer interview series with Matt Harpering. It's all coming up on today's edition of Locked On Jazz. Pow! How are you? I'm David Locke, radio voice of the Utah Jazz, Jazz NBA insider. This is Locked On Jazz, your daily podcast on the Utah Jazz. Can you believe it? We're almost here. Hopefully we're giving you insight, expertise, and making it more fun to be a Jazz fan throughout the offseason. Thank you so much. Our numbers have been superb on listening numbers all offseason, and I really appreciate all of you taking the time to listen, making it a part of your life. It's been super. So thank you very much. It's very rewarding. It's very easy, actually. And there's some days, obviously, where it's not easy to do a show. We are at 990 ratings and review. The silly goal was 1,000 and a 5-star. So we're at 5 stars. We're at 990. 922 of them have been 5-star reviews. So I thank you very, very much. Most recently, it looks like I can't pronounce that. But he says, do you like to go full geek on numbers, like really, really geeky? Then you'll love this podcast. Beyond the numbers, though, it's well thought out, professionally done. Thank you. My only request would be to change up Locked On BYU at the end. I'm reaching. That's fair. We have had Jake running that promo too long. That's a great suggestion. You guys, I miss things all the time. And Wesley Mort says, I'm a successful professional, but I struggle with chronic pain. Sometimes all I can do to divert myself is something interesting and fun. As a lifelong Jazz fan, Locked On Jazz is perfect. That is so rewarding. Thank you, Wesley. I'm so sorry to hear about chronic pain. That sucks. And his answer is so he's got a bunch of great stuff in there. So thank you guys very much. Appreciate iTunes reviews are appreciated. We're trying to get to 1,000 for no particular reason other than it kept us entertained during the summer. All right. The big news of the week is that Matt Harpering and I finally got together for an interview. That actually probably should be the big news of the week. And that's coming up next on the show. But first I wanted to touch on this tampering thing. I don't get it. And there's some, so it means two things to me. It means there's something more going on here than meets the eye, because it's very clear that inside the NBA world, so that run by Adam Silver and that run by the owners, that there is an incredible underlying tension about tampering and what's taking place amongst owners, toward players, with agents. It's clear. Unless this is just a PR stint to make it look like they're trying to be impactful on this, then I'm not sure I understand it. I really don't. I don't understand for a few reasons. I don't really understand what we're trying to prevent. And two, I don't really understand how we think we're going, the league is going to be able to control it. And three, I don't really know what the league is truly willing to do. Are they really going to take all the cell phones and go through all the communication and do that type of investigation against one of their own owners? Now, Adam Silver's point is, like, if we have rogue owners, it's really a big problem. That is absolutely true. There has to be a level of decency amongst the ownership that each of these people are willing to do the right thing and make sure that they run the league. And there's no question that we knew Kemba Walker was signing with the Celtics. It sure sounds like Al Horford and the 76ers was done a long, long time ago. You know, Kawhi Leonard's Clipper thing started a long time ago, but then he needed Paul George, and they knew about that. And so it's what strikes me, though, is like two of the bigger free agencies coming up in the next years are like Giannis is the big one, right? Or we could localize it to Donovan for us. There's not a team out there that doesn't want Giannis. And frankly, there won't be a team out there that doesn't want Donovan. So to some extent, everything that's being done every minute of every day by every franchise is to lure these players to them. Which then in turn, to me, makes so very little sense of what are we trying to stop here? Are we trying to stop that teams want players? Okay, well, that's not going to happen. And to some extent, all communication, you don't want the Golden State Warriors communicating with Giannis Antetokounmpo. What is that communication we're trying to stop? Hey, by the way, we'd be really interested in having you. By the way, we're going to clear cap space. They can just say that publicly. Hey, you know what? We're going to be clearing cap space. And, you know, we'll be able to clear 29 million, 30 million in cap space. And Giannis Antetokounmpo and his camp will know, well, we're the number one free agent. So we'll certainly be interested. So many of these things, frankly, are logical that I don't understand what they're trying to stop. If we really believe that somehow by this tampering rules that you're going to prevent a player from going to the LA Clippers or the Boston Celtics, that's crazy. These players know everything that's going on. The agents know everything that's going on. So are we trying to control the communication between agents and front office people? Now we're into such a terrible realm. Now you're just going to do every single one of your communications on secret apps. And frankly, how are you going to prove it? Unless somebody's an idiot and says, hey, I know Kemba Walker's a free agent. But if you say, yeah, things aren't really working out with our point guard right now. It's too bad. You know, Kyrie doesn't seem to be really happy with us. You know, we'll try to figure out a way to adjust that moving forward, see if we can get Kyrie happy or find a better fit as we move forward. To Kemba Walker's agent, you're not doing anything illegal. You're just basically telling him we want Kemba Walker. So to me, I don't get any of this. Maybe I'm missing something. I have a really big disconnect here on this whole tampering thing on three levels. One, it's clear to me it's a major, major issue for the league, or the team of governors wouldn't have voted that, and Adam Silver wouldn't. Or it's a, and I can't figure out one, if internally it's really causing that much strife. Or two, it's a PR stint. Okay, so that's the first of the two things, and I can't figure out which it is. I actually think it's causing that much internal strife. I think if NBA people are listening to this, they'll be telling me that it's that important. Okay, for the team camaraderie of the 30 owners going forward, believing their investment, there must have been a feeling internally, we must do something about this. So now something has been done. And is that something anything? Is my next question. And then my final question is, why? I actually think the best way to deal with this, and I said this on Friday, is to pull all the rules. If there are no rules, I actually think the teams will govern themselves to some extent. And what I mean by that is Greg Popovich has a player that he really likes. Quinn Snyder is not going to, in his upcoming press conference, say, man, DeJounte Murray is amazing, and what I could do with him defensively is so much better. It's just not going to happen. And Greg Popovich is going to say, you know what, I loved coaching Donovan. He was a pleasure to coach. Is that tampering? Hey, if they have a relationship, they know it. I almost think that if you pulled all the rules, everybody would. This is good open market conservatism on my part. That if you pulled all the rules, it would actually all equalize. Anyway, those are my thoughts on tampering. Summer interview series with Matt Harpering next on Locked On Jazz. Before we get to Matt Harpering, today's show is brought to you by Murdoch Chevy. I got to tell you, last night I was driving the Blazer up. My daughter and I were out in Palm Springs for a golf tournament. Came out of the airport driving up. I said, well, you know, I really like this car. It's got great space, great size, drives well. It's, in my mind, it's the four-door, five-seater. So if you want more seats, you can get it. But in this case, that's what it was. It's got all the safety features, nice little display on both Apple CarPlay and Android. It was just a really nice car. The Chevy Blazer that Chevy has that they've added to their amazing SUV lineup, you know so well, from the Tahoe to the Suburban, the great truck lineup of the Colorado and the Silverado, and then back to the SUVs, the Equinox, and now the Blazer as well. So check it out. It's all at Murdoch Chevy. located in Woods Cross, as well as available for you up in Logan. Casey's doing a great job with the store in Woods Cross. Ben is up in Logan, and make sure you stop by. 90 years of the Murdochs and Utah together, bringing you expertise, bringing you no regrets experience, and bringing you Chevy. It's like apple pie, Americana, vanilla ice cream, which I don't really like that much, and Murdoch Chevy in Utah. Check it all out. The Chevy Blazer. It's worth the test drive. I think you'll really enjoy it. I'm enjoying mine right now. Matt Harpring joins us for our final guest of the summer interview series. We're a week away from training camp opening. And Matt, I would ask you if you're excited for the season, but since I know that basically every one of your children got sick last night, if you say yes, you'll get divorced. And if you say no, you're lying. So I won't even ask you if you're excited.
Well, first, thanks for having me on. Yes, a rough night last night. As anyone with kids can understand, you have those nights. But anyways, as far as the season, this is probably the most intriguing season, I think, for me since I've started the broadcasting that we've had in a long time as far as expectations go and where this team can go. So I think from that point of view, it's very exciting.
In Salt Lake, anywhere you go, people are talking. I even was talking on Friday's show about how, like, we're referencing kind of regularly to think they could be the number one seed as though it's just, like, realistic expectation. Do you feel it? Are other people, are you feeling it outside of Utah, that even outside of just Jazz fans, people are aware of what's going on here?
Yeah, I do. You know, on the East Coast, I hear a lot more Utah talk than I've ever had. I feel that they're in the conversation, which that hasn't been the case in years past. And so when you talk about who's going to win it, you hear, you know, four or five teams mentioned a lot, and Utah is usually one of those teams now. So I think that that's a certain upgrade. You hear it on the West Coast, you hear it in Utah especially, but on the East Coast, they tend to, you know, to root for the East Coast and East Conference team, and they go for the Lakers and kind of the popular names. But I think, you know, Utah is making its way into the mark of being on the tips of everyone's tongue.
What move was the one that when you saw it come across the wire or heard about it somehow, you were like, oh yeah, that's the right, we're heading in the right direction?
You know, I'm probably different. I think a lot of people would say Conley. I'm going to go with Bogdanović. I think that move was a big time move. I think he's a tremendous player. He's one of my favorite players. I think he provides a skill set that not a lot of guys have anymore. I think there's a lot of catch and shoot guys now. There's not a lot of guys that can run off screens and use screens and shoot the ball well. I mean, you got the Klay Thompsons, you got the Reddicks, you got, you know, some players like that. You know, I think Korver was there in his prime, and he did that a little bit for the Jazz the last couple of years. But, you know, that's a diminishing role on teams and a skill set that you just don't see a lot of people do that anymore. And I think Bogdanović can be that guy. Certainly he can spot up. I mean, there's no question about that. But I think he uses screens so well. So I'm interested to see him offensively in a system like Utah with Quinn and with his surrounding cast, what he can do. Because you simply can't leave them wide open as a spot of three, but then also you got to keep track of them all over the court.
You know, you bring up a great point here, and it's been interesting to me that since Bogdanović joined the team that I found myself, you know, I always liked him. He actually was always kind of one of my numbers darlings. It was interesting to go back and try to really understand his game. So if you look at guys who use off-screen action the most in the NBA, yes, Matt, it took me a grand total of 3 minutes before I went to a geeky number. It's incredible.
I wouldn't expect anything.
Here are the guys. Klay Thompson used the most, no surprise. Joe Harris,
yep.
Alan Crabb,
yep.
Davis Bertans, Kyle Korver, Landry Shamet, mm-hmm. Terrence Ross, Bojan Bogdanović.
You know, and then look at that list, and then if you were a GM, which one would you pick out of all those? And Bogdanović would be in your top three.
Yeah, well, considering the fact that Klay Thompson's on crutches, he'd be my top one. But other than
right.
No, you bring up, and then
he might even be top two, right?
Right.
I mean, he could be.
I mean, I think I'd rather have him than Joe Harris and Alan Crabb. There, and then Landry Shamet. Still, we'll see. Yeah, absolutely. He can because he can do so many other things. I mean, the interesting one
was Reddick not in that list.
That's a good question. Let me go see if I can J.J. Redick is not on that list.
Wow.
J.J. Redick uses a off-screen 15% of the time and 2.5 times a game. Bogdanovich, 3.5 times a game, 22%. Top of the list, Klay Thompson, 7 times a game, 34%.
And David, what that means is you can't load up on your defense when someone's moving or has a chance to come off a screen on the weak side. That's the power of it. You know, it's just picture Donovan up top of the key, and you have on the weak side Bogdanovich moving off a screen. The defense has to be aware. They can't just watch Donovan Mitchell be ready to make a move and then the defense get ready to react on Donovan. You got to pay attention. And then that means whoever's guarding Rudy or whoever's setting the screen for Bogdanovich has got to pay attention too. So then you're making three guys guard and only two, maybe people watching at that point. So it's very difficult to guard.
There's a versatility to his game that adds on. That's a great point, Matt. Thank you for kind of taking it to that next level. There's a versatility of that game also that's interesting. So there's the off-screen aspect. Spot-up shooting, he's in the 92nd percentile of all spot-up shooters in the league. And actually, what's interesting about that, he's very good guarded. Like, there's a big difference between a guarded shooter and an unguarded shooter. And he's able to shoot well while being guarded. Now, is that handoffs and off-screen and coming off picks and just being able to get it off and knowing how to use space? What allows someone to shoot well when guarded?
I think it's just talent, right? I mean, you have to practice that way, and some guys can do it, some guys can't. And, you know, he's one of those guys when I watch, I love watching guys that move without the basketball, for one, but then when he gets the ball, he's not one-dimensional. I mean, he can certainly put the ball on the floor, but when he's guarded, you said it, he can make tough shots. And there's some guys that can make wide open threes, but then all of a sudden when a closeout's coming out on them and hand in their face and they're contested, you know, their numbers go way, way down. Can a guy sit there and pressure and be calm when you're getting contested and still knock it down? Very tough to do. He's one of those guys that can certainly do it.
How hard is it to integrate a player like that?
Not hard. He would fit on any team. You have a shooter like that with his skill set, I think any team, all 30 teams would welcome, especially in the way the game is played today. He's going to play the three. He'll play the four. He's perfect for today's game. He spaces the court. You just can't leave him open. You know that we just talked about that. But also, he puts the ball on the floor. I've seen him put the ball on the floor. He makes good decisions when he does it. Is he a terrific ball handler? No. Is he good enough? Absolutely.
Watching him, the only weakness I see when he puts the ball on the floor is he's just not an often passer. Right. So
right.
He comes around the picks you're talking about, makes the curl. They guard it well. Then he'll put it on the deck and try to beat you that way. And he's probably putting up the shot. He's going to have to learn to give a little bit on that with the amount of talent he's playing around him. Why do you think he has been statistically better when he's not on the floor with Victor Oladipo? So both pre-injury and post-injury, he was incredible when on the floor without Victor Oladipo.
I think he probably got more opportunity. His volume went up. His ball usage probably went up. You know, they had to rely on him more. And I think as a player, you get into a rhythm. And I think when you play in rhythm, I know when you play in rhythm, it's easier game. It's much harder to play when you're not touching the ball as frequently in a game. And if Oladipo goes off, obviously he becomes the main guy. And he's handling the ball. He's getting more touches. You feel the ball. You feel the game. So I just think you play a little bit better in those scenarios. I don't know. I haven't done the numbers. I mean, obviously, you'd have. But I felt that way for a while. When a guy has to touch it less frequently, you'll probably see some shooting percentages drop a little bit. It's just harder. It's easier to play when you're in rhythm.
He's Matt Harper, and you'll catch him on Jazz TV all season long. We'll ask him the number one question we've had all offseason since the Jazz roster changes when we continue with Matt here on Locked on Jazz. Today's show is brought to you in part by Homey. I've been telling you a lot about how Homey is revolutionizing the real estate market, how Homey is changing how you sell a house. Why do you have to pay extra when it gets down to being, you know, you've done the job, you've done the landscaping, you did the upgrade. Why should you be giving an agent more? Well, that's still true, and you can text LOCK to 88588 to find out more, but Homie also can buy a home for you, and they'll refund you $5,000 back so that you can buy more home with your money. Customers are raving about their service. You can get $5,000 back, closing costs and fees. Text LOCK, L-O-C-K-E, to 88588 to find out more. You'll get a Homie agent, will help you find your dream home, tour homes with you, make offers, negotiate the best deal, and then give you $5,000 back at the end of the experience. Check it out. It's not just funny, bright teal billboards around town. It's a service that saves you money and lets you have more equity in your house. It's Homie. Go to homie.com to click on a tour. Or just text LOCK, L-O-C-K-E, to 88588. The number one question to me, Matt Harpering, did the Jazz get all these open looks for the last 2 years because their players couldn't shoot and no one cared? Or because of the system? Which do you think it is?
I think I would heavily weigh on the system. I think they had to protect the rim with Gobert. And I think that's something that a lot of people don't talk as much about, because he puts so much pressure on the rim. It forces the weak side action on the weak side to come in and not give up the lob, which creates some open threes. On the other side of that, I think there are scouting reports at times when guys are open, they might not rush out to them as quickly as they usually would. That's certainly part of the game. But if you look at Quinn's system and you look how it is, it's a very difficult. And I think the personnel that just came in for this year's team makes it even harder to guard. You got four guys out there with Gobert rolling to the rim that you just can't leave at any given moment. And not only that, you have pretty much four guys that can put the ball on the floor. What I like is, and I found this interesting, and I think Joe Ingles being left-handed in Quinn's system actually helps him. You know, as a player, when you're defending and all of a sudden you're doing switching as often as teams switch, you know, scouting reports remain differently on different players. Obviously, you don't want Joe Ingles to get to his left hand, but when you're dribble handoffing and you're motioning around, then all of a sudden Joe gets it, and you're just coming off, say, from last year, Rubio, who's, you know, is a right-handed player, or Mitchell, who's a right-handed player, and then all of a sudden you switch on Joe, you got to change your mind so quick in the game to be like, oh, I'm guarding someone else, I got to hurry up, get on his left hand. You know, that makes it a little bit more advantageous for a guy like Ingles being left-handed in that open opportunity system. Then you bring a guy like Conley, another left-handed guy that's going to run the pick and roll, and then you got Mitchell right-handed. It's going to be very difficult, because when you switch as often as the Jazz do, then they hit you with that quick pick and roll when teams switch as often as teams do now, and then all of a sudden Gobert hits you with that pick and roll, it's very hard to defend. And then you got to guard the roll, and then you got the open shooter. So it's going to be fun to watch.
Well, if it's because of the system, this team's gone from having two of the worst catch and shoot shooters in the league for their position to having actually like four of the top 30 in the league. I mean, that it's just an incredible transformation of the shooting on the floor from last year to this year.
Well, if you were to look at last year and you said, David, what's the one need that the Jazz have to address this year? What would it be?
They had to get some shooting. And they had, I think they right. had to get, and honestly, as much as I love Derek, I think they had to spread the floor. I mean, the numbers,
right.
The numbers of that group offensively just were so poor that one thing no matter how good the defense was against good offensive teams, I just didn't think our offense could catch them. Even if we held Houston and Golden State and everyone and Portland and Denver down far enough because our defense was that good, I wasn't sure our offense could be good enough to catch them.
I totally agree. And, you know, if you learn from year after year, the last 2 years, when you can't beat someone in the playoffs and you can't beat Houston, you say, you know what, we have to change. You know, what do we need to change? We got to get shooting. We got to get spacing. So they went out and you got to give yourself a chance to beat those guys. And I think that's what they addressed, and now they're giving themselves a chance this year to go compete against anyone, any team they can match up with.
What will an open floor, which it seems, I mean, there's really no scenario the Jazz are playing two bigs. So what will an open floor do for Donovan Mitchell?
I'm looking for big things, obviously looking for big things. I think one thing with Donovan is, you know, the thing that I'm going to watch this year is probably you are and the rest of Jazz Nation is just his efficiency. You know, can he be more efficient in big games? You know, maybe it's the playoffs, maybe it's big games. I know how dominant he can be against the teams that we're supposed to beat, but when you're playing against the elite, he's got to be good. He's got to take that next step. And, you know, he averaged, 24 last year? 23.5, 20, somewhere around there. You know, whether it gets to 25 or stays at 24 or gets to 22, I think the efficiency part of his game is more important than the actual number at the end of the season.
What will Mike Conley do for Donovan Mitchell?
Well, listen, anytime you have threats, you have three other guys that are spacing the court that you can't leave. And Conley, one of those guys that, you know, is a great three-point shooter, the lane is wide open. And we know with his athletic ability, there's not a lot of guys, if anyone, that can stay in front of Donovan one-on-one. And so it becomes the scenario that you dream about that says, okay, let's get Mitchell in open space. Let him just be Donovan. And decision-making's got to get continue to get better. And again, he's got to make shots at the rim or in the restricted area that he need, that should go in when he gets those looks. Because there's not a lot of people that are going to be leaving either Conley, Bogdanovich, Ingles to come over and help when Mitchell starts driving.
So we're talking about so much about how it helps Donovan. We'll dig more into Mike Conley and point guards and the impact here, and I get a retro from you on Rubio. But the other angle of this is if you look at who Mike Conley's been playing with, Avery Bradley, Garrett Temple, Tony Allen, Tayshaun Prince, the last time he had a wing player that could score was Rudy Gay, who did it very inefficiently, I might add, in about 2011. What does it do for Mike Conley to have Bojan and Donovan and guys around him that can score? He's never had this out of anyone that wasn't Marc Gasol or Zach Randolph.
Well, to me, it takes pressure off Conley. You know, you're not in every play where you have to create or be the guy. And I think Conley's been in that situation a lot in his career. I think now, obviously, Donovan's going to be our guy. He's going to be our number one option. And then Conley is going to get his touches and his times when, you know, you come down, if Donovan hits you with one or two series in a row, you're going to get, you know, a Conley pick and roll. And then he's going to be able to maybe, I don't want to call it rest, but be a spot up shooter on the weak side. So you're going to be playing fresh more often. You're going to be playing, spotting up. And then obviously with his ball handling, his passing ability and just his veteran, experience, it's going to be so hard to guard, and it's going to help Conley. Same thing that helps Donovan. The lane is going to be open. And when you're small and you're 6'1" as a point guard, but you're super quick like Conley, getting into the lane against any defense is a must. And when you do that, it just totally collapses the defense. And then you pick your poison from there. You either got the three or you got the floater or you got the layup. But anytime you get into the middle of that defense, and I think you got guys like Ingles, Conley, Mitchell now that are great at doing that. It's going to be hard to guard. Yeah. You know, the question is going to be how good of a defensive team we're going to be. I think offensively, we have addressed the issues offensively on paper that the Jazz needed to address. The question now in my eyes is, can the Jazz be still a lockdown defensive team? Are they still going to be elite at that end?
What's your thought?
Will they be elite as last year? I'm not so certain. I think we're going to play more up tempo, which would require Rudy to run a little bit more. And I think he might get caught in a little transition at times. So I think maybe not as high, because I just think we're going to play at a faster pace. Maybe. But also, I think I want to give a lot of respect to Favors and what he did to this team defensively. I thought he was terrific defensively, and he bailed out the Jazz quite often on a number of games. I think he's going to be missed defensively.
Matt just brought up a point. We'll talk about the defense and the lack of Favors, and we'll do that in tomorrow's edition of Locked On Jazz. Summer interview series with Matt Harpering continues here on Locked On Jazz and tomorrow's show. Make sure you grab Locked On NBA. It's your daily podcast on the NBA. We're still cooking it out every single day, even in the offseason, but training camp right around the corner. This is Locked On Jazz, part of the Locked On Podcast Network.